I've seen a lot of really violent films, and even for this, I was a bit like, oh, a bit much.
I hate it when people are wasted in films, and it tends to be women that are wasted in films. Mm. Monica Bellucci in Spectre, wasted. Margot Robbie in this is wasted. I think it's just that, you know, what's going on here?
There are so many subplots and, like, different things happening and things within things, like the question of, did Cliff Booth kill his wife? Is literally one scene in the film, but it has you think that the whole way through. I just think that's really cleverly done.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of Flixwater Podcast. I'm Kobe, and today I'm joined by Meg.
Hiya.
Fran.
Hello.
Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast. Joining us today remotely, we have Meg and Fran. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
So I am Fran Tarauskas, and I work on a couple of different podcasts, but my main one at the moment that I'm trying to get off the ground is called On the Outside, which is a panel show podcast that talks about what's happening in outdoor sports and outdoor news. So fairly niche, but very interesting. And I also write part-time for Pod Bible magazine. So I'm the digital editor over there. So if you are ever in need of any podcast recommendations, head on over to Pod Bible.
Yeah, it's a very good magazine. And tell us a bit more about On the Outside. Why did you decide to make a podcast about being outside?
People that do outside sports do tend to love podcasts. We listen to them a lot when we are in great pain, walking very long distances and running very far. And I really like the idea of speaking to people from different sports. So outdoor sports is all kinds of different things. I tend to just run and hike, but I wanted to speak to people that were on different sports as well. So the cycling and paddleboarding, and I've got a wheelchair cyclist and all of this kind of stuff. So yeah, we've got really, really diverse panel just talking about what they find interesting in the sporting world, or the outdoor sporting world.
Yeah, and a focus on diversity and inclusion in the panel as well, right?
Yeah, that's it, definitely. It's diverse views on outdoors news is the official tagline.
Meg, who are you?
Who am I? That's a really good question. amongst other things, I am a freelance producer. I am a disability rights campaigner. I'm a journalist that writes about disability issues. I'm also sometimes kind of a model. So, yeah, I'm very much a jack
of all. What is sometimes kind of a model? What does that mean?
I'm technically a model. I've only had one job so far, so it's in my Instagram bio, but I'm not getting a lot of work from it. So, yeah, that's what I mean by that. Very much like a jack of all trades, master of none kind of person.
Yeah, we crossed paths working on the Paralympics podcast.
We did,
over the summer. How was that for you?
That feels like so long ago, you know. It literally feels like years ago, but although it's only last year. That was so good. I really enjoyed working with the whole team on that. It's great. And the guests were amazing. I still can't believe, like, the level of people that we got on that show is sick, yeah.
Yeah, so that the podcast is called Equal Two, and sorry, there's too many guests. I'm trying to think.
Tanny Gray Thompson.
There you go.
Yeah, Jamila Jamil.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson.
Yes.
Michael Johnson.
Guys, there's all of them.
Yeah, literally. All of them. Every disabled person was on it.
My favorite person I hadn't heard of before was a lady called Harbin Gurma. In fact, there's two people. Harbin Gurma, who is a deafblind law graduate from Harvard, who was just like amazing, and the guy called Jim He directed a documentary called Crip Camp, which is on Netflix. And I've kept in touch with him because he's been teaching me about the Grateful Dead. I'm disappointed. I can't remember this. Jim, I'll get your name in a second. But we're here today to talk about other films, which today is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Meg, which is your choice? Can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then I'll bring the countdown timer up and you'll have a minute to tell us the synopsis. God.
Oh, not good under pressure. Okay, we'll see how this goes.
This is the fun of it. By the way, let's just give you a bench line. Myself and Helen are terrible at doing this ourselves. So okay, really.
Cool. So the bar is low, to be clear. The bar is low.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Well, I picked this film basically because I'm a massive Tarantino nerd. I know he's quite divisive. I think somebody tweeted saying that already to us. But I saw Reservoir Dogs at quite a young age, like a scarily young age, actually. I think my mum mentioned it was her favourite film, so I decided to watch it when I was about 10. Take from that what you will. A bit young. And then ever since that, I've loved all his films, and I've seen the majority of them. I've tried to actually go and see in the cinema. So, yeah, I think he is divisive, but I think he's brilliant. He's a bit of a knobhead, but he is brilliant.
Put that on the poster, Tarantino.
Yeah.
Bit of an op-ed, but he is brilliant. He's got a book out. He's done a dramatization of Once Upon a Time. Yeah, yeah. I think it's, is it out now? Someone nodded. Was it you, Helen?
It must be. People have reviewed it, so.
Oh.
Too late. Must exist somehow.
Okay.
Too late for it to be a Christmas present, unfortunately.
Yeah, and your 60-second countdown starts now.
Okay, so Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is set in 1969. It features a wash-up TV actor called Jake Cahill. He's kind of, his career's pretty much gone downhill. He's not getting a lot of work. And he's got his best mate there. His name's Cliff something. Can't remember now. Cliff Booth, that's it. I could see the clock kicking down. and those are really a duo in the film. And then parallel to that, you have the story of Sharon Tate. We are allowed spoilers for this, aren't we?
Yeah.
So if you know anything about the Manson family murders, you'll know the film does not end well for her. So again, like Inglourious Basterds, it's kind of Tarantino retelling history and putting his own spin on it, basically making stuff up that never happened.
Awesome.
Well done. Seconds to spare as well.
Great. There we are.
Just to prove there was a timer. So Meg is a Tarantino nerd. I think Tarantino is the most frequented director we've had on Flix Watcher.
Really?
This will be film number 5? Yeah. Am I counting?
So we haven't had The Hateful Eight, and we've not had the film that's based on Rum Punch, which Jackie Brown. But I think we've had everything else apart from that. Oh, Volume 2 we haven't had. Fran, where do you stand on Tarantino?
For the most part, really, really like it. I haven't watched all of his stuff. Absolutely loved the Kill Bills. I actually watched Volume 2 first.
Oh, wow,
and then like watch Volume 1 a few years later. I think it's just because that was the one my sister had. And so we watched that one.
Access is, a big part of how you get into films.
That's it. But yeah, really, really do like his stuff. It's very, there's not very much like it. So you know Tarantino films when you're watching them. But yeah, it's done some really, really interesting stuff that is just like visually incredible. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, also Django Unchained is one that we haven't had on yet. So there's still a few to pull in. Obviously, it depends on what Netflix has got to show for us. Helen, where are you on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood particularly?
So generally, I'm a Tarantino fan, but this one, I really struggled with this one. Like
More or less than with Hateful Eight, because I know that's one you weren't a fan of at all.
Well, I went to see Hateful Eight in the cinema. I didn't even bother to go and see this one in the cinema. I think I definitely remember seeing the trailer and not understanding what it was about, and watched this towards the end of last year. I ended up doing this weird Brad Pitt double bill, watched Ad Astra and this, which are two very, very long films. And I think I was not prepared for how boring I found this. I was like, expecting a lot of things, but I thought it was a bit boring and a bit long. And there was a few other things which we'll probably come on to that have kind of niggled with me. But yeah, I was just like, this is meant to be Tarantino. Like, it's meant to be exciting and slick. It's just like a lot of driving and a lot of nothing.
Quite a lot of driving, to be fair.
Yeah. How familiar are you guys about the whole Manson family and the Sharon Tate murders?
So I have a funny story with this one because I watched it with my boyfriend and I knew about it and he didn't, but I didn't know that. So by the end of the film, he did just turn around to me and go, "What the hell happened there?" And I was like, "Oh, do you know about the Manson murders?" He's like, "No." So that's a fairly key part of knowing what's going on in the story. So yeah, it's definitely, I think, gives a lot more context. I think you do kind of have to know a little bit going in, otherwise...
Yeah. So what did he think of the ending, just out of interest? Did he think that was kind of how it happened and it was all groovy? Or
did he even know it was based on a true story?
He didn't even know it was based on a true story. So it was very much just a "what happened there" kind of reaction.
I can imagine if you know nothing about the Manson family murders, the ending must be really underwhelming. You must be like, "Wait, what?"
I wonder.
Nobody died.
It's weird. Then, do you think you need? Do you have to have that knowledge to go into a film to enjoy it? Did you enjoy it apart from that, or was it just like, "And that's the end, and that's the weirdest film I've ever seen"? Why did you make me watch this, Fran? Why?
I mean, it's not the weirdest film I've ever made him watch, but it was a definite kind of. I think because it's very long as well, so there's so many different aspects to it that there's bits from it that he enjoyed, but I think the overarching thing, he just came out with a "what was the point of that film" kind of reaction to
it. Fair enough.
Has he seen Inglourious Bastards?
Yes. Yeah.
What was his thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I want your thoughts, not your boyfriend's thoughts.
I think I was thinking about this because I did find this one a bit more. Maybe because it's a bit newer and because, like, as in the history of it is a bit newer, I did find it very difficult to watch the ending, where I haven't really found it difficult to watch any other gruesome Tarantino aspects. And Inglourious Basterds, like, yeah, it's also rewriting history, but seemed like it was a bit more fantastical, whereas this one just seemed like it was, didn't quite sit right with me, the ending for this one.
What about yourself, Meg?
Yeah, I mean, we could get into the ethics of the ending. Is it okay that, you know, he kind of rewrote something like the death of a woman and her baby and her friends? Probably not. Would I do it? No. Am I Tarantino? Also no. So I think that's where I stand on it. He does have a shock factor in a lot of his films. So it does make sense to me that he would do that.
I think I just think it's a bit weird because people are going to watch this and think that, like, she didn't die and it was all groovy. And think that was the truth. And... It was such a turning point. It was so horrific
for culture,
what happened.
Yeah.
And it was such a turning point for Hollywood, like filmmaking completely changed, people's attitudes changed. It was such a massive moment for cinema. And I guess what Tarantino's saying is that by not having it happen, he's kind of like preserving the golden Hollywood thing. But the fact that it was just kind of this real moment and he's erasing it, it just kind of feels a bit weird. And also, I'd probably be a bit more on board with it if there was more agency to the Sharon Tate character in the film.
Yeah.
Because Margot Robbie, like, she's beautiful, she's gorgeous. That's kind of all she does really in the film. And it just feels a bit like, I don't know what the point of it was. And maybe there isn't a point. Maybe I'm just kind of like trying to overthink it a bit. And also... like, the Manson murders were really, really, really horrific and violent. Mm. And there's also really horrific violence at the end. And it's a bit like, so you d- decided not to go with the actual violence, but you went for this violence, which is also like really horrific, and towards women as well. There's a couple of men in it, but it's actual like really horrific flamethrower violence and stabbing in the head and all kinds of stuff, which I've seen a lot of really violent films. And even for this, I was a bit like, oh, bit much. Bit much, you know, I've seen a lot. This was a bit much. But then it's kind of weird because it's also a little bit kind of cartoonish, because obviously like he's on acid and the dog is, and then like the dog like starts getting involved and like they start punching the dog and I'm like, the dog can't die. And I'm thinking, why do I care about the dog more than the people? It was a very weird experience, I think.
Yeah, I will say, like, because I've seen this film like 3 times. I don't even care that it's 3 hours long. I've seen it many times. But the first time I saw it was in the cinema. And at the end, I was surprised there were no like end credits explaining what actually happened to Sharon Tate and all the mates and stuff. I was quite surprised by that, because I do feel like you do need the context to understand.
I think it's weird because it's recent history, but it's not, certainly in the UK, I don't think it's something that's kind of taught. And I don't know how I learned about it in the first instance. But when I did, I was like, wait, what? And then I've spent so much time, I've read many books about Sharon Tate, I've seen many documentaries about, there's a recent one last year called Helter Skelter, a documentary series, which I watched, which is awesome. And it's weird. I don't want to say he belittles it, but I'm not sure how many people, like Fran's boyfriend, appreciate what happened then and what, as Helen said, the turning point, the shadow it cast. A couple of problems I had with this film, or challenge I had with this film is, and this is the second time I watched it, I think, first of all, it's a lot better in the cinema. I think the whole kind of atmosphere and everything's better in the cinema than it is at home. And it kind of falls on a lot of different vignettes. So it doesn't really have a story. And then the Sharon Tate not having a story within not really having a story is even kind of less of a thing. And it makes, I think there's, I hate it when people are wasted in films. And it tends to be women that are wasted in films. Monica Bellucci in Spectre, wasted. Margot Robbie in this is wasted. I think it's just that, you know, what's going on here? But apart from that, there are some vignettes which I found are really cool. Like when Brad Pitt goes to Spawn Ranch and it's like a really kind of creepy, like, what's going on here? And that in the cinema was like awesome. But then other vignettes are kind of less so. But yeah, were there any kind of parts of the film which you could have stood out either positively or negatively for you guys?
For me, like you say, there's definitely kind of like aspects of it that you can take out and by themselves are really good. And I really love the seeing I can't remember his name, but Leonardo DiCaprio's character being
Jack Cahill.
Yeah, being kind of like the cowboy within the oldie TV stuff. So doing that kind of thing. And I think I can't decide whether I love or hate the scene where you basically get the whole scene of him within a cowboy bar and being like the evil person entering into the cowboy thing.
And throwing the girl onto the floor.
Yeah. And it's like you get a really long scene that is basically us watching them filming something, but it's, you don't see the film crew until quite a long time into the scene. And I couldn't quite decide whether I loved that it was really long or whether I was like, it's like 5 minutes that's technically not the film at all. It's just like a cowboy scene within the film. So I think there's, aspects like that where I kind of like them, but I feel like it's really long and maybe Tarantino just got a bit carried away with himself with some scenes where he's like, I'm enjoying it, we'll carry on.
I think, see, that's what I really like about this film is the fact that there are so many subplots and like different things happening and things within things, like there's only a really tiny bit in the film, but like the question of did Cliff Booth kill his wife is literally one scene in the film, but it has you think that the whole way through. I just think that's really cleverly done.
I felt a little bit uncomfortable with the Bruce Lee scene. I felt it was maybe could be interpreted as being a little bit racist. And also Zoe Bell, cringe. I mean, she's an amazing stunt person, but she's not an actress. So that whole sequence with her and what she was wearing just felt completely out of the period. And
so it just, which is the Zoe Bell scene?
With Bruce Lee. So she's kind of, presumably the stunt coordinator on. She's the one who comes and shouts at them and says, like, what are you doing? You're crashing into the car or something. I can't remember.
Okay. Wasn't Zoe Bell the stunt double for...
Uma Thurman
on Kill Bill 1 and 2. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So she worked with Tarantino, and she's in Death Proof as well. So she's worked with Tarantino a lot, and she does all the stunt
stuff.
Death Proof,
that's another one we have not had on here.
In this, she's acting, and I found it a bit cringe. I don't want to like crap all over the whole film. I think the strengths for me were that, you know, it was kind of fun seeing Brad and Leo being like buddies, and the bits that were the strongest bits where you kind of really felt like their bromance was like really genuine, and you know, when they were having fun together, you really felt that. So I guess I probably would have liked maybe it to be more focused on that and a little bit leaner around that, maybe without the bits going off in tentacles.
Do you want to talk about anything else before we head to the scores? Meg, you want to talk about the 60s fashion and stuff like
Yes, that's another reason why I love this film, because I think the fashion in it is amazing. Also want to note that me and Fran both picked films that start in the same year. Did anyone else notice that? What are the chances of everything on Netflix? We both picked films that start in 1969.
Yes.
And Golden I watched. Year. Yeah, apparently. So I watched Once Upon a Time first, and then I watched Apollo 13. And because I've seen Once Upon a Time first, I was kind of judging the fashion in Apollo 13, be like, well, the fashion's not as good in this one, which obviously Apollo 13 is not about the fashion at all. But yeah, that was just my mentality on it.
I think I'm so bad tonally, fashion-wise. So it's one of the things that completely passes me by. I don't know, Fran and Helen, what are your thoughts on the era?
Yeah, to be honest with you, there's not many that is... I'm sure I was liking them when I was watching it, but there's nothing that I can think of right now that I was like, oh, that was an amazing outfit that I really loved. But
so we had a trip to the Playboy Mansion, didn't we?
Yeah, because there's a scene in it where Roman Polanski is wearing like Austin Powers suit, which presumably it was like, obviously not obviously Austin Powers took that inspiration, but that possibly was where Austin Powers' costume came from. I don't know. So that was very much like, why is he dressed in Austin Powers? It's very strange. But I think the costume design is excellent. And I think the kind of like the Sharon Tate costume, I think possibly it was like her sister was kind of like approved it a lot. And like she even like gave Margot Robbie like her perfume and some jewellery to wear as well. So I think it's very kind of authentic to what, and obviously she didn't wear shoes either, so that's something they kind of carried in. So no 60s.
There's a lot of foot action for Tarantino.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. I'm sure that suited Tarantino quite well.
Okay, guys. Well, let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Meg, with your recommendability.
Oh, I give it a 4.
Any reason? Who wouldn't you recommend it to?
Anyone that doesn't like Tarantino, I'd give it a 5 otherwise. But if somebody says, I do like Tarantino films, I'm not going to recommend this to them.
Sure. What would be your gateway Tarantino film?
Oh, I think Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why not? You watch it when you were 10?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's made for kids, basically. And I think this is going to sound really silly, but of all the Tarantino films, it's the least Tarantino-y.
Yeah, that's it. But it's interesting that, because it's budget was less. We can, I think the dialogue is there, but in terms of a show-offiness of production, then yeah, less so. Fran, recommendability score?
I'm going to give it 2.5, which I kind of feel like that's a little bit low now, but because obviously if you don't like Tarantino, you're not going to like it at all. But also that thing of, if I were to recommend a Tarantino film, there would definitely be other ones that I'd recommend. I think, obviously, if you haven't seen any, Kill Bill's my favourite. Start with two.
Start with two, work back.
Work backwards. And yeah, I think it's definitely not kind of like the most recommendable. And because it's quite long as well, it's that thing of, well, if you've got plenty of time, you can watch this one. You have to have a bit of back information. And so you'd have to tick a few boxes before you could recommend it to someone.
Helen.
Yeah, I really, really, really didn't get on with this one. And I saw on Letterboxd that someone called this a boner for Hollywood nostalgia, which kind of like summed it up a little bit. I think if you wanted to see this, you probably would have seen it by now. But if you were kind of maybe a little bit on the fence and you like Tarantino, but you hadn't seen this, then you should still probably see it so you can at least have an opinion, because I thought the chat would be more in the love camp, but there is a lot of love for it out there, so it might be that you love it. So I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3 as well. I think it's a tough one, and I haven't seen Death Proof. I haven't seen Hateful Eight. So it's weird that there are Tarantino films which I love to bits, but I'm also just aware of where he can kind of just completely lose me. So I'll never watch Django Unchained again. I'm just not interested. But I'm, you know, I'm keen to watch Kill Bill, and I'll watch Inglourious Basterds and Pulp Fiction at the drop of a hat. So it's a weird kind of director love-hate for me, I think. Repeat viewing score. Meg, you've seen this 3 times.
I have, yeah. And for that reason,
I want to give you a medal or something.
I just like the film, guys. Okay, we've all got different opinions. Because I've seen it 3 times, I'm gonna have to give it repeat viewing 5.
Fran,
I'm gonna give it a 4, because if you've watched it once, you probably already fairly like it, and I have watched it twice now. And the second time I definitely got bits out of it, which I didn't get the first time. So it's definitely one of those that, because there's so much going on, you're going to be missing bits the first time, I think. So yeah, I think could watch again.
Helen.
Very long. 2 hours, 41 minutes. I can't remember what the other ones were. I know like Pulp Fiction, it's over 2 hours. I think Reservoir Dogs is kind of unusual in that it's only like an hour and a half or something, isn't it?
It's a normal length, yeah.
it is quite long. I had an opportunity to rewatch for this and I didn't. Maybe if there's some kind of... I'd need a special reason, I think, to watch it. Maybe if there was some kind of like special screening event or something, maybe that would be the thing to get me to watch it. So a 1?
1. I'm going to go for a 3. I will watch it again. It's not going to be... It's one of those films I think I'd put on and not really be paying attention to stuff. Because if you miss like one vignette, then you'll just wait and then the next one will happen, which you'll probably catch a bit more. Small screen score, Meg.
What does that mean?
So how well do you think this works on a Netflix environment, i.e. your TV, versus does it work better in the cinema?
Yeah.
If you think it works better in the cinema, then it's a lower small screen score.
Yeah, I'm going to give it like a 2. I agree with what you said. It's definitely better in the cinema, for sure. I think as well, because it is a long film, and I personally don't mind long films, I do like to see them in the cinema. Because when I'm at home, I can very easily pause, and I can very easily look at my phone and do stuff like that. So when I'm watching a film that's over 2.5 hours, I want to see it in the cinema, basically.
That leans into the engagement score in a bit. Fran, small screen score.
I'm going to give it a 3 because I've only seen it on the small screen. And I really like the fact that you've got the TV program within the film. So I think that fits really nicely on the small screen because you're watching the TV program on the TV. But I can see how the aspects, especially with the landscapes and like you were talking about with the ranch and the many driving scenes, would look good on a big screen. So I'd also like to see it on a big screen if I could.
Helen.
I get the impression that if you said to Tarantino, "Oh, I just like watching your films on the iPad," he'd like punch you or something. Feels like that kind of director, doesn't he? I'm going to give it a 3. I think I probably would have got something more from it on seeing it at the cinema, possibly. So yeah, a 3.
Yeah, I'm going to 2.1 here. I think some of the driving scenes are quite cool when they're in the big screen, and because it seems to be super widescreen, when you have it on an iPad or a TV screen, there's just so little of the actual visible space. But when it's, you know, the big long stretch car and it's driving along, it's like, oh, this is quite cool. But at home, not so much. Engagement score, Meg.
Oh, I give it probably a 3. There is a lot of driving scenes, but then there's a lot of action. So yeah, 3.
Fran.
I'm going to go with 2. Because there's so many different places at which you can go. That's it. That's kind of like the end of a scene. That's the end of a little vignette and that kind of thing, that you can just like pause it and either go away and do something or not come back to it. So
Helen.
I could go down the middle, 2.5. Pretty much what Fran said. I think it is interesting because it does really go from like absolutely nothing to like ramping it up or something really kind of pivotal happening. And I just didn't know. I was kind of like reading about who are these people like made up of. And I was like, oh, something's happening quick. I need to go back to it. So yeah, it's a funny one, this one. It's very strange.
It is very strange.
Yeah. I'm going to go for 3 because I think, yeah, you have to be paying attention, because when the good bits are on, you want to make sure you're there and focus. And I think the Western shooting one was good. Then you had the scene at Spawn Ranch. And I think you have to have the payoff, whether you like it or not, the violent ending, you have to be kind of semi-focused. Otherwise, it's just at the end, you're just thinking, well, that was nonsense, in the same way Fran's boyfriend did. And that gives us an overall score of 2.88125. Which is definitely, I don't know what the next lowest is, but it's definitely our lowest Tarantino film on here. So everyone who is listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And one of the main reasons to follow us is because we put a little tweet out before we go into a recording saying something similar to, "We're recording Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Meg, Roz, Foz, and Frantic T from On the Outside Pod. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and the score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out." We got one response today. Meg, do you want to read that response out?
Yeah, sure. So this is from Stroke. Hello, Stroke, if you're listening at home. It says, "Probably my least favourite Tarantino film. Honestly, you don't get the love for this one. 2 stars."
Yeah.
Matches the chat vibes, I think, so.
I think so. 2 stars. We've got 2.88 here. Meg and Fran, can you sign off by telling us and the listeners where we can find you online so they can follow you and listen to more of you?
Yeah, so for myself, if you head to Twitter, I'm at FranticT. And that's a mixture of all kinds of different things: outdoorsy, podcasty, random political chats. And for my podcast, if you head to ontheoutsidepodcast.co.uk, and it's got links to all of the episodes and all of our social medias there as well.
And Meg.
Yeah, so you can find me. I am at Meg Rosfoss, that's M-A-G-M... Cut to that.
Of course you can.
Yes, so you can find me. I am at Meg Rothfoss, that's MEGROZFOZZ, on Instagram, Twitter, and now recently TikTok, because I'm clinging to my youth.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much, Meg, for bringing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to us, and we'll see you later.
Thanks so much for coming on. Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him Flixwatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.